Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. Entrepreneurs are defined as risk takers, people who take a business idea and run with it. But that run is part of the risk. Not only does the idea have to be commercially viable, the entrepreneur usually has to attract investment to get the project to the finish line. Easier said than done in many cases, although the environment for entrepreneurs and their startups seems bright here in St. Louis. And that's good for all of us because it means more jobs, more money being pumped into the local economy. I'm Don Marsh. We'll talk about the world of the entrepreneur on today's program. Joining me in studio are Tim Hayden, director of the Center for Entrepreneurship at the John Cook School of Business at St. Louis University, and Dr. Paul Olson, president and co-founder of Kypha, a medical technology life sciences startup. Kalia Collier is GM and owner of the St. Louis Surge, a semi-professional women's basketball team here. She'll join us by phone in just a bit. And also joining us a little later by phone is Katie Lee, the founder of Katie's Pizza in Richmond Heights. In September, she'll be opening Katie's Pizza and Pasta in Rock Hill. She launched this project using the crowdsourcing concept Kickstarter. Well, we'll start with the gentleman first. Impolite, I suspect, but that's the way it has to be for this group. Thank you both for being with us.
Let
me begin with you. This is the second part of a two-part series we started yesterday. And the guests we had, most of them in the med tech business, biotech and what have you, painted a very rosy picture of the entrepreneur scene here in St. Louis. Do you agree with them?
I agree with them. It is a great time to be excited about what's going on from an entrepreneurial landscape, both on the biotech side, the pure tech side, and just literally starting your own business in manufacturing, service, whatever. St. Louis, we've really caught a wave. And what's occurred is there's so much push now between the investor community, the entrepreneurial community, and quite a few people that are either coming, flocking back to St. Louis, flocking to St. Louis for a first time or rebounding like a boomerang. But there's so much activity going on, which is exciting.
Well, one of the points that was made yesterday was that a lot of people are flocking away from St. Louis, being lured away, if you will, Shanghaied almost.
Yes, and you'll always find that. But that undertow of that undercurrent will end up being that a lot of great talent still resides in St. Louis. For example, we had, only maybe 9 months ago, the chief technology officer for the Disney Corporation just moved back to St. Louis. So there is we lose and we gain. And so I think you'll always see that ebb and flow.
Well, part of the ebb and flow, Paul Olson, has been you. I mean, you came here from Kentucky. What attracted you to St. Louis?
Well, there were several things. So basically, my former company, Potentia, was in Louisville. And when I was there, so we developed a first complement inhibitor for age-related macular degeneration. And we made an arrangement with Alcon in 2009 to sell that company. Well, during that time, I was working at a bioincubator. Well, my company was in a bioincubator in Louisville, much like the biogenerated cortex here. And working for that incubator was my business partner now, Chad Steening. And we got to know each other quite well. Actually, his office door was right by the exit door, so every time I went in and out of the building.
That can be a bad sign.
Yes, it could be. But it actually turned out okay. And so we got to be talking about a lot of different ideas that we'd had, and we were both very entrepreneurial at heart. And so we decided that we were going to do something together. We didn't really know exactly what it was going to be, but we knew that we wanted to do something together. At that time, Chad had his wife had their second, and they had no support network in Louisville, and he was originally from St. Louis. And so they were considering moving back here. Well, he started to make frequent trips here and got to know the local environment very well. And so we started to learn about a lot of the opportunities and resources that were here in town. And back in it's been about 2 years ago now, we decided looking at what both cities offered, the resources, the talent pool, things like BioGenerator, having a lot of former Pfizer employees that could be potential new employees, we decided to make the jump and move the company's headquarters here.
And I gather it's been a successful venture up to this point.
Oh, it's been fantastic up until this point.
Tim, the idea that this has so many attractive parts is an interesting one because I think most people aren't really aware of what's going on here.
It's funny that you say that, Don. From the standpoint of St. Louis University and all the other universities, we get a chance to see a lot of talent come here for the university, your college age. We also notice that with St. Louis, and I'm sure this is every high school kid, college age kid, will want to leave but eventually they'll come on back. And so we see this, again, that ebb and flow, but there is so much activity going on, and that's really what we've tried to create within the Center for Entrepreneurship at St. Louis University is we are one of the hubs. So we are part of the ecosystem, and there are so many great players in that ecosystem. But it transfers out to the point where you may come across somebody like Paul today, and then the afternoon you'll be sitting with somebody that is creating a Kickstarter campaign, that is then opening up a law firm. So it's amazing to see all this.
As the number of players increases, is there a danger that it will dilute the talent pool? We'll have to spread what talent we have that much farther?
Sure. And that's always a concern, and you'll hear it from quite a few people. I think we are still at the stage, though, where we need as much momentum moving forward as possible. I always keep saying that anything is a good thing right now because we still are so young. We have put so much effort into our past Fortune 500 companies that we've kind of let that ecosystem, that entrepreneurial ecosystem, flounder a little, where now what you're seeing is all these folks who were really under the radar are now popping back up. RCGA, St. Louis County Economic Council. I mean, I can keep going on and on with all these groups that were fighting a good fight in kind of a closet, and now it's been unleashed.
You know, one of the things that we learned yesterday is the fact that the economy is a player in all of this. The economy has not been good, as we all know, but nonetheless, the number of entrepreneurs seems to have increased, and their future seems very, very bright. But part of the situation is many people have lost their jobs because of the economy.
Exactly. And I will challenge and even ask Paul as well is the economy will push more people into this industry. Let's call it entrepreneurship.
True.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be successful at it. You see Anheuser-Busch in giving their buyouts, you saw an influx of a lot of entrepreneurs, but they may not have been, I don't want to even call it trained, but they don't understand the complete culture of it. And so it's really up to our ecosystem to help support those kind of folks.
Paul, can you address that part of it?
Oh, yes. Well, being an entrepreneur is very different than working for a large corporation. It's a completely different skill set. When you work for a large corporation, generally you become a specialist at something. As an entrepreneur, you have to do everything. You're a jack of all trades. And that's part of the excitement, but it's really not for everybody. Some people like security. Some people don't flourish in that kind of environment. And a lot of people now that are looking for jobs kind of have to ask themselves, is this the environment that you want? And really the only way to know is to dive in and see if you like the water. Mm-hmm.
You know, I've known people who for many years said, boy, I'd love to own a restaurant, mm-hmm. and then somehow managed to get into the restaurant business and to find out very quickly how difficult that
yep.
is and that they're not prepared for that.
And I'll take you a step further. There's a gentleman named Chris LaRocca. And Chris LaRocca, if you're from St. Louis, you would know Crazy Fish, which was about six
sure.
different restaurants. When he got out of that business with his wife, he ended up starting a new business, which was if you are somebody with some wealth and would like to start a restaurant, get in touch with Chris LaRocca because he will help you create that theme, that entire restaurant concept, bring in, hire everybody, train everybody, and then set it up for success.
Speaking of restaurants, I'm going to bring Katie Lee into the conversation in 1 minute. But before I do that, one question I wanted to ask of you, Tim, concerned the diversity in the entrepreneur field. I've heard people express concerns that not enough women and not enough minorities are taking part in this whole process. Is that right?
It is to a certain extent. And so if you pull back from like the Kauffman Foundation, which is out of Kansas City, very big on entrepreneurial research, what you'll end up finding is that St. Louis is dead last or near dead last in all major metropolitan areas for female entrepreneurship. So those are initiatives that we are taking to heart at St. Louis University to try to, I don't want to even say rectify, but to be able to put a spotlight on it. There is a lot of great talent. It goes back again, a lot of tremendous talent. But what we need to be able to do is help all boats rising. If you can help one, you can help all boats rise. And so from the university, we're looking at those kind of initiatives to help out.
We had the same expression used yesterday in the program. Well, one final question before I go to Katie. Is there a number, a percentage out there of the number of people who make it when they get into the startup world?
So this is one of those massive myths. And we teach this to all of our incoming freshmen that are interested in entrepreneurship. It used to be that, what was it, like 70% of all businesses will fail within 5 years. What it really comes down to is this. And like you said, a lot of people will want to start restaurants and will have no experience in restaurants. What we need to do is better educate some of these folks. You cannot create an entrepreneur through a university. What we can do, though, is teach them entrepreneurial skill sets. So most people will learn it on the job, or they'll learn it, you know, out in the real world, and we can also help it with the university. So the actual statistics are a lot less. If you get to year five, you have a great chance of success. Normally that's that window, if you will. It's definitely not 70%. It's definitely not 90%. It's a lot lower than that point. But it also depends on the industry, the infrastructure, the mentors that can help, and kind of that ecosystem that comes through.
Well, let's bring Katie Lee into the conversation. Katie, you still there?
Hi, Don. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Nice to have you. You're really defying a couple of the odds here because you are a female who's had a successful enterprise, as I mentioned, in Richmond Heights. And now you're embarking on yet another, a bigger project. But you're doing it a little bit differently. We heard the word, the term Kickstarter a moment ago. Tell us about your experience.
Well, I grew up in the restaurant business, and I actually had a female mentor. My Aunt Zoe owned a bunch of restaurants. So I was lucky to have that, but, you know, I decided I wanted to open this new restaurant, and I was kind of putting my feelers out there to see if I could find investors, and a friend of mine mentioned crowdfunding. I'd never heard of it, so I kind of researched online and found Kickstarter and didn't know anyone that had done it before, had to figure it out and look at other people's projects, and I thought it was very interesting. I love the idea that I was going to be able to get the community involved, get publicity, get my project sort of out there. And so we, researched it and created the project and threw it online, and the rest is history.
But you were not seeking total funding for this project. It was just a small percentage, I believe. Tell us about working out these numbers and how you go about that.
Well, so we were trying to figure out what number to put on Kickstarter, and we didn't want it to be too huge because it's an all or nothing idea. But the idea was when we put the project out there that we would find the investors. That people would see the project and we would be able to gain all these interesting, wonderful people that would want to become traditional investors. We weren't sure if it was going to work or not, but through the process, through the 30-day campaign, we got a lot of phone calls and emails and met with a bunch of people and interviewed them, and they interviewed us, and we put all the puzzle pieces together, found the rest of the funding, and, you know, got a lot of attention for it. So it was scary, and it was interesting, and we learned as we went. But, you know, it was a great experience. Got a lot of attention for the new restaurant, which was one of the main goals.
Sure. Well, you raised a little bit more than $40,000, if I remember correctly. What's in it for the investors?
Well, initially, I think the biggest misconception is that they are donating or they're just giving you money. And we wanted to make that clear that that would not be the case, mainly because we don't believe in that. We believe that, you know, if you're going to put money up, you get your money back and then some. So we decided to create rewards that were of equal or greater value to what they were backing the project. So, you know, they get gift certificates, they get cooking classes, they get invited to the pre-tasting 10-course meal before we open. They get kids' pizza parties, all kinds of creative, fun stuff. People from out of town got handmade artisan pasta sent to them, and they really get to feel like they're part of it. So they get to come in with their backer gift certificates. They were, you know, some of the people that helped create it, and come and enjoy a great meal.
One other thing I've noticed about you, Katie, over the years, we are Facebook friends in terms of full disclosure. I want to let folks know that. But one of the things that caught my attention about you was the fact that you were very aggressive on Facebook in promoting your former Katie's Pizza. How did that work for you? And tell us a little bit about that social media experience.
Well, when we opened Katie's Pizzeria, I opened it with my father, and we didn't have an advertising budget. So I had to kind of figure this out because this was my baby, and I wanted people to know about it and to, you know, come in and patronize the restaurant. So I found out about social media and just decided that I wanted to take that on full force. And I think that was one of the successes with Kickstarter, is that because of my social media presence, I was able to get this project out to a lot more people than the average person could have. And I like to get creative with social media. I like to, make it an involved experience, ask questions, show pictures, sort of invite you into the personal life of a restaurant owner.
Well, obviously it was very successful. Katie, I have to take a break now, and I'm going to be talking to some other people. And you're in Chicago, I know. If you'd like to stay with us on the program, I'm not sure how much we'll be able to get back to you, but you're welcome to stay if you like. Otherwise, enjoy Chicago. It's up to you.
Thank you, John.
That's Katie Lee. She's about to open Katie's Pizza and Pasta in Rock Hill. That was partially funded by crowdsourcing. That is Kickstarter, as you've just heard. Back in just a moment with my guest in studio, Tim Hayden, director of the Center for Entrepreneurship at the John Cook School of Business at St. Louis University. Dr. Paul Olson is president and co-founder of Kypha, a medtech startup. And when we come back, we'll also be joined by Kalia Collier. She's the general manager and owner of the St. Louis Surge. That is a woman's basketball team. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation about entrepreneurship in St. Louis. Tim Hayden and Paul Olson are with me in studio. In a moment, we'll be joined by Kalia Collier, who is a young entrepreneur that, Tim, you know. But before we talk to Kalia, I want to get your reaction to Ms. Lee and the way she went about funding this business of hers.
Oh, I think it's brilliant. I think what you're starting to find is entrepreneurs will find a way to get things done. It's persistence, it's passion, and it's everything else. I love that Katie's got the background in restaurant business. I love that she's got a mentoring network in place to kind of help her out as well. But the Kickstarter campaign is brilliant. I mean, in essence, the brilliance of Kickstarter is you are literally getting customers to prepay. And so therefore, it also determines how successful your business is going to be. I mean, if you're pre-selling all this stuff, if there's a lot of customers, you got a very successful business model.
They've got to come into the building at least once to take advantage. And if they like it, they're going to be back again and again.
And they'll be telling other people about it as well.
What about the Facebook part of the story? I mean, to me, unless you watch this campaign that she waged, you wouldn't believe it. She was relentless.
And that's what you're finding with the next generation of entrepreneurs. Yeah. Social media is a driver. And what we're finding right now is it's not all about just the likes and the friends on Facebook. It is now using it for a business sense. We just started a class, a gentleman named Ron Roy, long story, great guy, wines that rock. His entire business was driven off of Facebook for business. And he's teaching that now to our MBA students, is how to use it more than just a social occasion.
Paul Olson, what do you make of all of this? Are you into the social media world with the things that you're doing?
Not really, no. Our business is a little bit more refined. We're in diagnostics and drug development. But sitting here listening to what Katie did, it's very exciting. You know, the whole idea where they're paying back by bringing in people for cooking lessons for free food is fantastic. I'm not sure that there's many people doing social media in my type of business yet, but it's such a new and young industry. Maybe somebody will figure it out at some point.
What was the hardest part for you in getting everything off the ground?
Where do I start? Well, there's so many things that have to come together. One, you have to have a good idea, and that is to meet, in our field, to meet an unmet or undermet medical need. And so what we are doing is we're trying to take a very simple test to use a diagnostic that detects how the body is responding to injury or infection. We take a drop of blood like you might for a glucose test. And then we put it on a test that looks like a home pregnancy test. But instead of learning whether or not the person is pregnant, it's how severely injured or how severely sick they are. And we can use this in several different disease areas. The areas that we're most interested in are autoimmunity, specifically lupus, concussion, and stroke. And so we can take and monitor a person's status or how severely they're ill within near real time. And that's really the hardest thing to be able to do, to one, have the idea, two, to develop it. So many of these things fail just because it's not a good idea, but nature doesn't comply.
Yeah, you remind me of Henry Kaiser's motto, find a need and fill it.
Exactly.
And that tends to be what works. What about funding?
Well, so funding, we've taken a couple of approaches to funding. Some of our initial funding was from grant funding. We wrote grants under the SBIR program, and we got our initial funding that way. And then we used that to generate enough value or a proof of concept that we could go towards other sources of funding. Part of the another funding we got was from the state and city here to help recruit us to St. Louis from Louisville. So that actually makes three sources of funding instead of two. But
Grants, Tim, are a pretty good way to go, I guess, particularly in fields like Paul's.
Exactly. And Paul, I mean, you hit on it perfectly, which is, you know, there is a perfect mix for each business. Mm-hmm. And social media is just one mix of that. And it may not play as well within the industry. But grants, we call it FFF. You know, it's all the family, the friends, and the fools that are jumping. It's the angel investors. It's, right. All sorts of different avenues.
Let's bring in our next guest waiting on the phone to get into the discussion is Kalia Colley. Are you there, Kalia?
Hi, yes. Thank you for having me today.
Well, it's nice to have you, and thanks for being so patient. I'll identify you once again as the general manager and owner of the St. Louis Surge women's basketball team. Now, we're talking about the various methods of funding people going into business for themselves, if you will. You took yet even another route, did you not? You did not seek funding outside of your own wallet.
No, I took a leap of faith. Transitioning out of corporate America, I seized an opportunity, and I just went for it.
Tell us about this this whole getting into it. I mean, this is quite unusual, I think. There aren't too many basketball team owners, professional or semi-professional, anywhere. You're a woman. I guess you played basketball at some point. What drew you to this?
I played basketball since I was 5 years old. I was also a collegiate athlete, Division I recruit out of St. Louis. And it was just the women's market in St. Louis was completely untapped until now. So just having the opportunity to push for it and present professional role models and mentors from a female standpoint in the community is the reason that I chose to take on this challenge.
You talk about a leap of faith. I mean, this is a pretty large risk that you took using your own funds to support this idea.
Well, I wanted to use my own funds in the beginning simply because I wanted to start our own foundation. This is what we accomplished without any mass marketing dollars. We were able to develop a base and a foundation last year of starting with a little over 1,200 people. We increased attendance every game, and we finished with over 2,600. And what we accomplished was grassroots efforts. So now we had that initial support from Ameren coming in as a game day sponsor, and now we've only increased corporate support this year to kind of give us that credibility in the community.
So what lies ahead? I mean, what ultimately is your goal?
Ultimately, we have a 4 to 5 year plan to actually bring a WNBA team to St. Louis, and we are currently on track.
And where do you get your players?
I personally recruit our players. I have a coaching staff of three. And we range from a little bit of everywhere, from Minnesota University to St. Louis University, Mizzou to University of Kentucky. And my job is to find talent from women who have either been cut from the WNBA or who are transition back overseas.
And what so, kind of – go ahead.
I was just going to give you kind of a dynamic of our roster now. We actually have three All-Americans on our team now. And nine of our players actually play overseas.
And you also play at the University of Missouri-St. Louis, isn't that correct?
Yes, that is our home facility.
May I ask what a semi-professional women's basketball player can make?
Well, at this level, we're actually exposure-based only. We are one of the only teams in the league. All of their expenses are paid for. So we help them transition to St. Louis. We also help with employment. But all of their finances, as far as their equipment, their travel, their per diem, is all taken care of by the Surge.
Let's stay with this. I want to get some input here from Tim. You know Kalia.
Yes. Yep.
What role have you, if any, have you played in all of this?
Nothing. I mean, her success is her success, yeah. Trust me. We have been very lucky to bring her on into our class, one of our entrepreneurship classes, to speak with the students. And what you'll find is what dynamic personality, persistence, passion. But the more important component, and Kalia, you were hitting on it as well, is this is first stage of a multi-stage plan. The real end game is foundation and WNBA team. She is finding a way to get it done across the board while gathering fans to come in, while playing at University of Missouri St. Louis as the home court. I mean, talk about persistence and patience. The woman has everything wrapped up. Tremendous woman.
How many semi-pro teams of women's basketball teams are there out there, Kalia?
Total, there are 54 teams a part of the WBCBO, which is the Women's Blue Chip Basketball League. And we finished number two in the nation last year. And we also host the national tournament for the first time in St. Louis ever, August 2nd through the 4th, which is a huge opportunity to finish number one in our home city.
How does the foundation aspect of this work? I'm not quite sure I follow that.
The foundation of essentially exactly what Tim says, this is a step-by-step process, and we are just in the beginning phases of building a consistent fan base by touching parents and kids personally. And I think for a mass marketing, we can't really, there's no point of putting up billboards, there's no point of running commercials until people know who we are and we've built our own base. So my goal is to never drop below 2,000 people, to where every single game we're increasing and it's an atmosphere, and it's by grassroots efforts. It's not only myself getting involved in the community, but it's our players. And that's our biggest thing, is that you don't just see us May through August. We are here year-round because it's out of sight, out of mind. Every single month we have an event that's geared into the community, and that's why our games are themed. Every single game for us is a themed community event.
And you ultimately hope to be a competitor to the WNBA or be a part of it?
Yes, and right now we actually have a roster that's stacked to where we could actually compete with the WNBA team right now. I'm looking at scheduling a couple of exhibition games next year. The talent level, and that I think people actually miss out, there are only 12 WNBA teams, so the room for expansion is definitely there, and we have a product that's not going to decline. People are not going back into the 50s, and whether you're a direct basketball fan, you support the evolution of women's sports in general.
Tim Hayden wants to make a comment.
And Kalia, another great thing that you guys have going is that you have tremendous female role models for a lot of our female youth. And so not only do they get to see the athletic side, but the business side, the community side. I mean, there's so many different components to it, which is a tremendous asset for our community.
Yeah. What do you think of this, Paul Olson? I mean, this is a little bit different from what you're doing.
Oh, not at all. No, I think this is fantastic. I'm just sitting here amazed and listening to the self-motivation and the will to succeed, especially in an area that women are so underrepresented. It's actually very inspiring. And in terms of having good role models for people, this is fantastic.
Kalia, do you have a timetable?
Regarding our next game, of course.
No, not the next. The next step up the ladder, you're obviously climbing.
I can't miss that opportunity to promote. We're looking to transition within 2016, 2017. I think that's a very realistic goal for us. But right now it's just baby steps. It's staying persistent. It's sticking to the plan. And right now we've researched every semi-pro team that's failed in St. Louis and why they succeeded and ultimately why they ended up failing in the community. And the biggest thing for me is, you know, I've been hit with almost 1,000 different reasons as to why we shouldn't do this. But I only need one. I genuinely feel like until we've exhausted all options, nothing's impossible. And the market here for a WNBA team is wide open.
Kalia, stay with us. I want to open the lines to listeners who might have questions with regard to getting into the entrepreneurial field, if you will, because we've got some gentlemen here and yourself who can perhaps give them some advice. If they'd like to call us at 382-8255, that's 382-TALK. We'd be happy to take your calls. We'll also take an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. And if you'd like to send us a tweet, we are ready for you at STL On Air. Stay with us, Kalia. Tim, let me come back to you. One of the things I've noticed from Kalia, and certainly noticed from Katie Lee earlier, is this not only a willingness, but this absolute intensity and the desire to promote what they're doing. This has to be a part of the entrepreneurial spirit.
It is. It is. You have to be your own best cheerleader. Starting a business is, again, and I know some people have referred to it as here's my baby. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to tell you your baby's ugly, but so the people that are going to be driving this the furthest are going to be the entrepreneurs. They're going to hear a lot of no's, a lot of rejections. There's going to be a lot of realism pushed into their worlds. But what they need to do is they're going to sustain themselves. They're also going to find like-minded people to help them build on that. One of the comments that, that I love is, you know, the diversity of it is that you cannot just be an entrepreneur. You have to have something, and this is what we tell our students. True. You cannot graduate to be an entrepreneur. You have to graduate to be a doctor, a lawyer, a business person, and what you're doing, and there's an entrepreneurial angle to this whole thing. So that's what I love about the diversity. Anybody can be an entrepreneur.
Up to a point, I suppose.
True. Yes.
There are some certain qualities in some of us that might not work so well. But, you know, it's one thing to promote a basketball team. It's another thing to promote a pizza. But what about, Paul, promoting the kinds of things that you're talking about that are difficult for most of us to even comprehend?
Well, there's a lot of things that are shared. The drive and the determination is one thing. With my previous company, we were a bunch of young kids, and I think a little bit of naivety helped right there too. But there's – and I say that in kind of in jest. But the – what you really have to have regardless of what business you're in is that self-confidence, that self-determination, not to stop when many things tell you you should stop, and to have the perseverance and patience of Job.
Mm-hmm. Patience, that's that is a virtue. You don't sound like you're very patient, Kalia. Sound like you're in a hurry to get the job done. Are you there? Maybe we lost Kalia. Well, I think the point was well made by her that she is in a hurry to get to that. Let me ask about the SBA. That came up yesterday, and this is a little bit different. What role does that play, Tim, in what's going on here locally?
Sure. So it is one component of the ecosystem. SBA is obviously set up federal government side of things. When people are looking for funding, when people are looking for assistance, networking, mentoring, business plan activity, things like that, SBA is a great source to use for education as well, if you will. But it is one small component of kind of that entire ecosystem where what you'll see is a lot of SBA driving one side. You'll see a lot of people talking in the media is angel investors. It could be the Arch Grants. It could be Capital Innovators, BioGenerator, and Cortex. And so SBA is one component of that.
Yeah. Well, we had the folks from Cortex in yesterday on the program, and everybody really is talking so glowingly about what's going on in St. Louis. I'll remind our listeners and you gentlemen who weren't here yesterday that Gene Marks, who writes about business for the New York Times, said St. Louis's tech startup scene is exploding and cities around the country hunt for the same magic. The local head of the Small Business Administration says this is probably the best time ever for entrepreneurs. Paul, let me come back to you with regard to the grants that you were seeking. How difficult a process was that for you in terms of consuming time and consuming energy?
It definitely takes time and effort, and you have to know what you're doing. There's many different types of grants that you can apply for. The ones that we apply for are very specific for medical small businesses. And it takes perhaps a couple of weeks or a month to prepare just the paperwork for the grant itself. And that says nothing about the idea and the feasibility studies you have to do to generate it. So it's a fair amount of work.
I understand Kalia is back with us. And Kalia, we were talking about patience being a virtue in this game. And I had commented that you don't seem to be very patient. You seem to be in a hurry.
No, you can't be in a hurry. Patience, you have to have patience to do something like this because it's not going to happen overnight. And that's something that I realized very early. You can't just have a basketball team and say, hey, people aren't showing up. You have to give people a reason to come and a call to action.
Do you have any regrets over self-funding this whole project of yours? Do you wish maybe you had gone another route? Has that become an issue for you in any way?
No, I think since we're so early, what it did, it gave us credibility. For me to now go into a corporate sponsor and say, this is what we accomplished without funding, it basically, what it does for me, it gives me more leverage to say now with some additional funding,
give us a chance to mass market. This is what we accomplished without any serious dollars. Now, give me a budget. So that's one of the things that we're definitely exploring right now is being a small business, essentially in the community, is looking for those grant opportunities, looking for different ways to actually start and being able to build a budget. That's my first and primary concern right now, going especially finishing the season and going into next year.
So that'll be helpful to you down the line, no doubt. Let Tim, you wanted to comment on
just
that.
Just like Kalia was talking about, every entrepreneurial endeavor is self-funded to start with. Mm-hmm. If you go to an angel investor, if you go to any source, they're going to want to know what skin is in the game. And I'd be curious from Paul's side, I mean, when you guys were starting up, was it kind of your skin in the game to start with, or was it kind of morphing?
Well, it morphed a little bit, but clearly we had skin in the game. We were putting in our time, my business partner, Chad, and everybody that works with us. And that's kind of our most valuable capital that we have right now. And it's putting in 16-hour days and always thinking about the business, that's some of that early starting capital.
Yeah, we had talked with folks yesterday again on the program, and they were saying that before they really commit to anything, they want to see some traction, that there has been some of that. The time is starting to get away from us somewhat, but I want to bring in Monroe, who's calling from St. Louis, I think wants to comment on our conversation with Kalia. Go ahead, Monroe.
Hello. Thanks again, Don, and hello, Kalia.
Hello.
I'm very impressed with I watched Kalia for the last couple of years as she's put her business out there. I've worked with a lot of startups as a consultant. She's got a plan. She's working her plan, and it's a delight to see the efforts that she's putting out.
Well, thank you very much, Myra. I definitely appreciate it. And I hope that I will be seeing you at our next home game, June 29th.
Monroe, you have it.
I'll be there with bells on. Well, actually, whistles, no bells.
Well, there she goes again, never missing an opportunity to promote. In the time we have left, Tim and Paul and Kalia, chime in as you feel the need to. What is lacking out there? What is missing in this whole thing? I'm sure it's not a perfect process now. Tim?
No, and it goes back to the realism. Entrepreneurs, and I am one as well, we all speak in very rosy terms. But to be very realistic, just like Paul was talking about, is you have to have a need. I mean, there has to be a pain there that you're going to be starting a business. But it's also going to be, how is it supported? Capital, and how is it supported with mentors? And so it is really our goal within our community is, how do we connect more entrepreneurs together with more entrepreneurs? We are going to need more capital. We are going to need more mentors. But we really need to be able to pull this ecosystem together a lot better.
Well, they're talking about raising $100 million here in St. Louis to do exactly that.
Right.
Paul, what do you think's missing?
I think I'd extend what's been said already and say that education, teaching people how to be entrepreneurs, that's one of the biggest problems. When I started out, nobody had taught me anything about entrepreneurship. I knew about science. I knew about immunology, drug development. But I didn't know the first thing about starting or running a business. And obviously people are becoming aware of that. But I think to teach specialists in different areas or just people that would have the drive, to give them the skill set to know what they're going to have to do to make a business is the critical missing piece.
And Tim, go ahead.
Paul brings up a great point. So St. Louis University, we've actually been teaching entrepreneurship since 1973. Okay. Which, no, but it's great because not a lot of people know about
it. Right.
And so the goal is, we have the 13th ranked entrepreneurship program in the nation, and we just want to get that word out even more.
Well, yeah. A few seconds left, and I want to get to Kalia. I just realized, Kalia, I didn't know this, that you were lured to St. Louis from Kentucky. What brought you here? But you have to tell me in 20 seconds.
No, actually, I'm originally a St. Louis native. I think what's interesting about entrepreneurship, transitioning into corporate America right out of college, you have to have the drive and passion. I mean, I worked 70 hours a week for Lexus. I work easy 90 to 95 hours a week. I think people first have to understand that once you dive into being an entrepreneur, you have to eat, breathe, and sleep and love what you do. There is no shortcut.
I have to leave it right there. Kalia Collier, thank you so much for being with us, and keep going with that Surge basketball team. We look forward to hearing more from you. I want to thank Tim Hayden for being with us. Thank you so much, Paul Olson. Thank you for being with us. Good luck with your project.
Thank you.
I thank Katie Lee, too, for being with us a little bit earlier. And our own science reporter, Veronica LaCapra, is following in the footsteps of Charles Darwin. We'll talk about that in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.